May it please the Court. My name is Maria Baldini-Poterman, and I represent Alexei Petrov, the petitioner in this case. Mr. Petrov is a 38-year-old man from the Far East in Russia. He and his parents are Jews. He entered as a parolee under the Lautenberg Amendment in January of 1998 and thereafter applied for adjustment of status in March of 1999. He became involved as a, quote, broker in the INS, FBI, and Social Security Administration's undercover sting operation known as Operation Durango. In his involvement, he brought four persons to a green card shop that was run by the former INS between March of and October of 2000. He pled guilty to one count of conspiracy to commit bribery and immigration fraud, fully cooperated with the U.S. officials in prosecuting other members and leaders of the conspiracy, and received a 16-month term of imprisonment in 2003. He does not contest that he has been convicted of an aggravated felony. Mr. Petrov was administratively ordered removed without a hearing by the DHS Immigration Customs Enforcement Office in October of 2004 based on his conviction. The asylum office thereafter found that he had a reasonable fear of persecution and torture in Russia. He was then placed in a withholding and convention against torture relief only proceeding before the immigration judge in Chicago. At that time, he began his case before immigration judge Cuevas. While his case was pending before the judge Cuevas, the DHS attorney stated on the record at a hearing in February 2005 that it was not alleging that he had been convicted of a particularly serious crime, and therefore he was eligible for withholding of removal. Nothing regarding the facts of Mr.
Are you just arguing abuse of discretion, or have you identified some statutory or constitutional issue that troubles you?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Petrov had a right under the statute and the Constitution, as it's been interpreted by this court, to a hearing before an impartial adjudicator.
I meant about the particularly serious crime issue.
Yes, Your Honor. The issue of whether a particularly serious crime is an issue before this court, we submit that it is an issue of law to be decided, a question of law.
Of course, that's not what we held in Tunis. Are you asking us to overrule Tunis?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm asking you to reconsider the decision in Tunis. It appears that there's a conflict that's arisen between the decision of this court in Hamid and the decision in Tunis. In Tunis, I understand that this court characterized the Attorney General's decision to decide whether a crime is particularly serious as discretionary. However, if we examine the actual language...
It's hardly dry on Tunis. It's a little early to ask us to reconsider it, isn't it?
Well, Your Honor, as far as the Tunis decision goes, the court actually, in reviewing whether the crime was particularly serious, got into the facts. And in fact, it held that the immigration judge had actually committed an error of law in deciding whether or not it was a particularly serious crime, but in the end said that because the respondent had not met the other five prongs of the Attorney General's test for drug trafficking crimes as far as whether it was particularly serious, that the petitioner lost anyway on that issue. So the court did reach and make a decision about whether or not the judge was and the board were correct in the finding that it was a particularly serious crime.
No, we just pointed out that, you know, if it were a cognizable issue, yes, there had been mistakes made by the immigration judge, but said it didn't make any difference.
Yes, Your Honor. If you go back to the actual statute of 8 U.S.C. 1231B, it refers to if the Attorney General decides, and the word decides is the critical point here. It doesn't say in the exercise of discretion.
Why are we arguing the Tunis case now? Also, what is your complaint about impartiality of the immigration judge or the board, or what's that about?
Yes, Your Honor. The issue that arose here was that the judge who ultimately decided Mr. Petrov's case and found that it was a particularly serious crime was formerly the head of chief counsel and also the head of the district counsel's office for the Immigration Service at the time that Mr. Petrov was prosecuted.
I think that's an odd argument, because wasn't he actually cooperating with the government in that case, Mr. Petrov?
Yes, Mr. Petrov.
And so he was on the government's side in that case, wasn't he? I mean, he was a defendant, but he cooperated. He got substantial assistance consideration by the government?
Yes, he did, Your Honor. However, there was an appearance of impropriety, if I can just recall some of the facts for this court. In February of 2005, the Department of Homeland Security took a position that Mr. Petrov's crime was not particularly serious. And basically it was before a different judge. We had a change of the immigration judge. We requested that the immigration judge, Katsavalis, recuse himself because he had been involved previously as the head of INS at the time Mr. Petrov was ordered administratively removed.
Look, there's no, even if this man were a federal Article III judge, being in a position doesn't require recusal. The question for an Article III judge would be whether he, in the statutory terms, quote, participated personally and substantially in the matter, close quote. Now, is there any evidence in the record that this immigration judge participated personally and substantially in the matter?
No, there is not, Your Honor. And I believe the only way we could find that out would be to transfer this down to the district court and have Judge Katsavalis deposed about his involvement. It's clear from the record that he was assigned as a special assistant U.S. attorney to the U.S. attorney's office that was involved in prosecuting Mr. Petrov along with the other members of the conspiracy.
People may claim to have the same problems with judges, but I'll assure you that judges are not sent for depositions to determine whether they participated personally and substantially. Right? The judges said he did not. You have no contrary evidence.
The judge actually never said that he did not. What he said was that he would not recuse himself on the basis that he had been previously the head of the district counsel's office or involved with district counsel's office before.
This judge was also at one time a law clerk to Judge Hart. If Judge Hart were sitting on appeal here, could he hear this case?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't hear the last part of what you said.
Would Judge Hart, if Judge Hart had some personal knowledge here and that the judge, the immigration judge here, was a law clerk for Judge Hart at one time, could Judge Hart be involved in this case if he was sitting here as one of the three judges hearing this case?
No, I don't believe so, Your Honor.
You don't think he could?
If you're asking if Judge Hart,
How far do you want to go with this this disqualification issue that the judge, immigration judge, should not have heard this case? He had no personal involvement.
Honor, we raised an issue because on the record, the immigration judge, without having an affidavit from any of the agents before him, because there were no affidavits submitted, without having heard any testimony from Agent Beckwith regarding what brokers thought about the individual, said, quote, this is the immigration judge, the government ran record checks because these were not legitimate cases. The brokers didn't know they were legitimate cases. They thought they were grimy and corrupt individuals. And just throughout the conduct of the hearing, in addition to this, there's no evidence why the judge would have made such a comment unless he had somehow been involved with Operation Durango and possibly the prosecution of Mr. Petrov. In moving on to the issue of whether Mr. Petrov has been convicted of a particularly serious crime, we ask this court to reach the issue that the board and the immigration judge misapplied the law under Matter of Frantescu to the facts before it. In Matter of Frantescu, the board laid out four prongs that were to be determinative, one being the nature of the offense, the circumstances and underlying facts of the conviction, the type of sentence imposed, and whether the type and circumstances of the crime indicate the respondent was a danger to the community at the time that he committed the offense. The burden was on the service to prove that he was convicted of a particularly serious crime. The Department of Homeland Security did not offer any other written evidence besides the indictment and the final judgment in the case.
Apart from the jurisdictional question, why is any burden on the agency, and indeed why does this matter? The Supreme Court held in INS against Yui Xiaoyang that participation in immigration fraud is a perfectly valid reason to deny all discretionary relief. Right? So quite independent of the 1996 legislation, which created these jurisdictional exclusions, what was relied on by the immigration judge here and the board is something that the Supreme Court has already said is a good reason to deny discretionary relief. What more is there to do?
Your Honor, in this case, withholding of removal is not a discretionary form of relief, nor is
Yui Xiaoyang involved withholding of removal. That was the issue.
I will take a look at that case, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Baldini-Paterman. Mr. Brownstein?
May it please the Court, Josh Bronstein for the Attorney General. Counsel touched upon the Court's the jurisdictional issue with respect to the determination that petitioner was convicted of a particularly serious crime, and there was no mention of the other relief, which and I think it's established that Tunis is the controlling law there, and the Court doesn't have jurisdiction over that. With respect to the claim under for protection under the Convention Against Torture, I just wanted to note something that we noted and petitioner has raised in the letter to the Court with respect to Tunis. Prior to Tunis, the Court held that it also lacked jurisdiction to review the factual basis or the factual determination by the Board that the petitioner was not eligible for Convention Against Torture protection. And that case is clear, and our position is that the Court has already held.
Which case is that?
The Hamid case, Your Honor.
But now, the Convention Against Torture is not a discretionary remedy. It would be outside this.
This, yes, Your Honor, but as an aggravated felon, and the jurisdiction limiting provisions.
Isn't even an aggravated felon entitled to the protection of the Convention Against Torture?
No, that's not the question. The question is whether the Court can review the petitioner's challenge to the factual determinations of the Board. And the Court in Hamid held that it could not. I think the Court used the language after reviewing the petitioner's due process claim, turned to the issue of Convention Against Torture protection, and the Court held under the jurisdiction stripping provisions as amended by the Real ID, the Court noted that unfortunately for Mr. Hamid, that he has raised a factual claim and the Court lacks jurisdiction to consider it. One point, going back to the Tunis case, the Court did undertake to review such a claim after the Hamid case, and we wanted to clear up, I think, what was merely an oversight on the part of the government. The Court's decision in Hamid is the law, which is that here the petitioner is clearly seeking a reweighing of the evidence in his case, seeking to have a substantial evidence analysis done on the board's factual determination on the CAT claim. In Tunis, the Court, notwithstanding the jurisdiction stripping statutes as amended by Real ID, and notwithstanding that it had already decided in Hamid that it could not reach those types of claims, the Court undertook a review of the CAT claim in its decision in Tunis. The problem there arose because we have to concede that nobody raised the jurisdictional issue in Tunis. It was no more than an oversight, considering that the statute is clear on its face and the Court had already held what the statute was saying, which is that it did not have jurisdiction to review that claim. And indeed, nothing in the Tunis case has in any way sought to address that jurisdictional question for the review of the CAT claim. And I note that I don't believe the parties even briefed that issue. And again, that was an oversight, a regrettable oversight on the part of the government. I can't speak for petitioner as to why it was not raised in that case. But indeed, the Hamid case is clear on that. I think that subject to any questions from the Court, that concludes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.